And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Because we are not catching every drug cheat, can we say we just dismantle this anti-drug movement? It won't work. Then it will be a free-for-all. And then what will happen is, you get a scenario where, for instance, instead of Olympic athletes walking behind the country flags, they'll be walking behind the flags of pharmaceutical companies.
It's part three of our pre-Rio Olympics special with legendary sprinter and three-time Olympian Tan Sri Dr. Mani Jegadesan. This week, he talks to us about the landscape shift in sport, the prevalent use of performance-enhancing drugs, and what every sport fan here wants to know, what exactly does Malaysia need to do to bring back our glory days in sport? That's up next.
Bar None, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, welcome to another episode of Bar None, your weekly dose of all things sport. Hello there, I'm Audrey Raj. We are less than a week away from the official opening of the 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio. Sadly, though, what's been dominating the headlines over the past few weeks is doping and how many events at previous Olympic Games in Beijing and London have been tainted by athletes' intentional use of performance-enhancing drugs.
The Russian sports minister Vitaly Mutko has said that he thinks the majority of the Russian team will make Rio, but it will be really tough with the time frame. The US doping agency has hit out at the IOC, saying that it lacks firm leadership and it's created an absolute mess. The IOC itself has undoubtedly watered down the original plan many people believe was in the offing, and that was to ban the entire Russia team.
Russia last weekend was lucky to escape a blanket ban from the Rio Games following reports of state-sponsored doping at the Sochi Games and other major sporting events. Their track and field team are already banned from competing next week, and many risk missing out as well following the McLaren report, which alleged widespread doping involving Russian athletes with the help of the country's secret service, government and sports ministry. This is unacceptable. To sports fans, to other athletes who choose to be clean, who do things the right way, who respect their competitors enough to observe fair play. So why do athletes dope? Legendary sprinter, three-time Olympian and president of the Malaysian Association of Doping Control Officers, Tan Sri Dr. Mani Jegadesan, has his theories.
You have listened to my story of our times, huh? In the 60s and so on, when, you know, there was no money and you were amateur sports. You win or lose, no big deal. Tomorrow you got to go to work or go back to school. And at the most, you win, somebody pat you on the back. So, you don't have to win at all costs. What happened was when sports metamorphosed into an industry and huge money started to come in, then there was incentives to win at all costs. And it was not surprising that there are people who also find opportunities within this industry. In other words, the people who can create and understand these drugs and start to provide them to athletes. All right? So doping became a part of the sporting scene. So for a few years, it went on without much control. Then the sports bodies tried to control it on their own. And then, of course, there was a feeling that they alone cannot manage it. So they formed this World Anti-Doping Agency in 1999-2000 to be given the responsibility. So today, WADA, or the World Anti-Doping Agency, is the umbrella body that puts in place the enabling and instruments to conduct the fight against doping. But as in any other field of enforcement, you can have the rules, but can you ensure 100% success? For instance, don't we all know that it is an offence to pass a red traffic light?
Yes, of course.
It is. But can you tell me that nobody beats a red traffic light?
I still do it every morning. It's true. I'm trying to get to work on time.
So, you see my point. But if, on the other hand, you say that you did it occasionally, all right? But at the time when you're doing, you're still worrying about this, aren't you? You're still, your eye, your peripheral vision is still looking for the cop.
Yeah.
Right?
Correct.
All right. What if they tomorrow said, oh, let's forget about it. No more traffic lights. Anybody can go where they like. Can really work? It won't work.
No.
So in the same way, because we are not catching every drug cheat, can we say we just dismantle this anti-drug movement? It won't work. Then it'll be a free for all. And then what will happen is you get a scenario where, for instance, instead of Olympic athletes walking behind the country flags, they'll be walking behind the flags of pharmaceutical companies.
Tan Sri Dr. Manijeka Desan, who was once the deputy president of the Olympic Council of Malaysia, has been part of 11 different Olympic Games in various capacities for Malaysia. He represented the country in the sprint events at three Olympic Games back in the 1960s, back when he was known as the fastest man in Asia after taking the gold in the 100 meters, 200 meters and 4x100 meters relay at the 1966 Asian Games. In fact, his national record in the 200 meters event at the 1968 Mexico Olympics remains unbeaten till today.
So your 1968 Mexico Olympic record in the 200 meters, 20.92 seconds, yeah, still stands till today.
Yes.
48 yeah. years.
Yes.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, you don't expect it to hang around there. You expect these records to be broken in a decent period of time, 5 years, 7 years. But somehow it didn't happen. So you can ascribe it to one of two things. Either I was ahead of my time, or these guys are not, they didn't work hard enough.
The current guys, yes, not working hard enough.
Not working hard enough.
Okay.
And I think that is part of the, or called the landscape shift. Those days, young people like us, we only knew physical activity as recreation. Every evening, any one of us will just rush out of the house to play something. Either you run or you play football or you
cycle.
And if your neighborhood, there's a guy who had a football, he became an instant hero. Because 20, 30 people could hang on to him and have a game, Similarly, if you didn't have a hockey stick, you cut a tree and you fashion your own hockey stick.
Cut a tree branch.
Yes.
Guy never did that, but...
Yeah. I mean, we did that, we didn't get stopped because we didn't have a proper hockey stick.
You got stopped by your mom when it was like 7 o'clock and you
yes,
come
yes,
back
yes,
home.
Yes, of course, because the moms would stand at the gate. And those days we used to live in, link houses or government quarters or whatever it was. Moms would stand at the gate and there'd be a series of moms, and all the moms would be singing like a chorus, shouting for the children to come back, And then you'll have your routine, have a quick bath, do your prayers, whichever religion you were. Quickly eat your food and then do your homework. And those days, we did all these things because even if we went to school and teachers actually scolded us, slapped us or anything, we dare not go home and report it because we'll get another slap.
Yeah, because your teachers know better.
Yes. Today, I understand parents will send lawyers letters and maybe even take lawsuits against the school, I understand. But those days, we dare not tell our parents we got slapped because we'll get another slap. The interest in physical activity among our younger people has diminished. So you get a lesser pool, And also, Malaysia has been doing quite well in some sports. We are world best in squash. We are world best
badminton.
We do very well in bowling. We are not so bad in archery. What is common about all these sports? They are comfortable environment. They are in air-conditioned rooms.
Right.
As opposed to the hardcore sports of hockey, football, athletics, where you got to train 4 hours in the hot sun, made worse by El Nino.
And the haze.
So our Malaysians are not unsportsworthy. But they're more attracted by sports with comfortable environments, I believe.
A Malaysian icon in the 1960s, Tan Sri Dr. Manijeka Desan did the country proud on the track in three Olympics and two Asian Games over 8 years. Brought home medals in events we never knew we could compete in, let alone excel at, and broke records that still remain untouchable till today. The best part is he did all this while studying to be a doctor and even while he was practicing medicine. Today, as a motivational speaker, he shares his secret to excelling in sport.
So basically, excellence in anything, in sports, can be summed up as being dependent on three concentric circles. The innermost circle is the self, where, your own DNA, your talent. I mean, if you're not suited for something, if you're 5 feet, 6 inches tall, it's very hard for you to be a top basketballer or a high jumper, but you'll probably be a very good weightlifter or a gymnast, It's very important to be in the right place, doing the right thing. And some of us are lucky we spotted fast. I spotted it very quickly. But some other people may never be found, may never be discovered. That's the first part. Huh? And okay, all right, you got talent. But if you just go to sleep every day, what's going to happen? Nothing. So you got to then, the self again. The self must be motivated to actually work hard and develop and realize this, But this brings me to the second circle. however good you are, however hard you worked, nobody can claim they got to where they are entirely by themselves.
Of course.
Anybody who achieved success had also to depend on others, often climbing on the shoulder of other people to get up there. So that brings a second circle. The second circle involves the people who actually had direct involvement with you, started with their parents. The parents are the ones who give you the earliest opportunities. They either kill it or foster it. Then the next group is the school teachers. And then thirdly, all those people then you come into contact with who shape your life for good and for bad. Sometimes you go the wrong way and, you know, you become gangsters and crooks and everything too. Again, you learn from somebody, right? Or you get influenced by other people, you know. So the same way. So what I'm trying to say is the second circle is very important, and you get the right support, and you can collectively call them the entourage. So today, of course, the entourage is highly developed skills, you know. A top-level athlete today may have actually 8 people working on him. The coach, the physical trainer, the team doctor, the dietitian. Physiotherapist, the dietitian, the psychologist, the biomechanist, you name it. You know, when one of these top world beaters, you know, the likes of world golf champions and so on, anywhere they go for a competition, they get a retinue entourage with them.
Yes.
You know, because it is highly dependent, highly skilled and so on. So that's the second circle. Now, the third circle is what people sometimes don't pay much attention to. Some countries have developed it very well. It's called the social determinants of success. I'm talking about morals, values, ethics, resolve. You can sum it by calling factor X. This factor X is the inner strength that you are able to harness at times of difficulty when you need that extra push to come back 2 points down and beat the other guy. Or when you're 2 meters behind and chase him and beat him, you know. Where do you get this sudden extra energy from? It comes from an inner resolve, which I call factor X. It comes from years of building up this third circle, which we call the social determinants, you know, the feeling of self-confidence, the feeling of self-reliance, the feeling of pride, and so on. This is not something you can do overnight. It has got to be a driven, organized thing that builds up over years. I don't think we have paid much emphasis to this, as opposed to some other countries, which I, you know, you can imagine. So it's little wonder why sometimes some of those guys can come from behind and win.
Mm. Where does that come from?
Come from,
that inner drive.
Yes.
Okay. Despite being immersed in the world of sport and medicine for more than 4 decades, Tan Sri Dr. Mani Jagadesan still wants more. This is why he continues to be involved in both fields, serving in his capacity as chairman of the Medical Committee and Anti-Doping Commission of the Olympic Council of Asia.
There are 3 reasons why we are against drugs in sport. Number one, the most important one is it is bad for your health. People actually die because these drugs have bad side effects, especially taken wrongly. Number 2, you know, it is performance enhancing against the rules of sport. You know, and number 3, it goes against the spirit of Olympism. So, for these reasons, we have to continue the fight. And like I said, any attempt at enforcement cannot guarantee 100% success. But it serves as deterrent. And deterrent functions must go hand in hand with education and awareness. So, these are the things that they need to are putting in place. But colored with this throughout the decades, since doping got into the prominence, there have been issues of organized government-sponsored doping by certain countries.
State-sponsored doping.
As opposed to an individual to making his own choice with his minder and deciding to take a risk. You know, peer pressure too. I mean, there were times when people were taking because there were slogans like, you don't take it, you don't make it. You know,
Everyone else is doing it.
So, you know, so these kind of things. So we have to be counteracting all of this propaganda, you know, and try to finally make athletes feel that it's the same. I mean, the other day, for instance, there was a program where they check to see what will people do if they find money on the road.
Yeah.
So not everybody returned it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
6 out of 7 people kept the money.
So this is where the third circle comes in. If the third circle had taught all the kids about the ill of doing things not right, say for instance taking this money, if they had been taught so well in the third circle, then your experiment that day would have ended up with different results. And there are societies, again I don't want to mention names, which put on a mask when they have a cold or a flu because they want to protect other people. There are other societies, I don't want to mention again, which will put on a mask to protect themselves from other people. Why is this third circle? I think you get my point.
With the Olympics just a week away, Tan Sri Dr. Mani Jagadesan hopes the country will remain focused on the spirit of Olympism and not be too taken away with Malaysia's quest for its first gold medal. As the former Deputy President of the Olympic Council of Malaysia, he understands the plight of our athletes.
I mean, I don't wake up with this worry every morning, you know, but just like every other Malaysian, I take pride in Malaysian success, obviously. You know, so I look forward whenever they do great things, I share the
joy
look forward,
and the pride.
Yeah, of course, in being, you know, being a fellow countryman and all that. So we look forward to successes. And especially since, you know, quite honestly, the Malaysian authorities have been very supportive of our sportsmen in terms of investment, you know, much more than a lot of other people. Lot more than other people. And the athletes should realize how fortunate they are really here. And if you really look at the kind of support that has been put in place over the last 30, 40 years, you know, in terms of Ministry of Sports, National Sports Council, funding programs, programs for elite athletes, and all, it's a lot. Not many countries can match this. So you do expect ROI, return on investment, you know.
Do you think we could be doing anything differently that could make a positive impact?
Well, like I said, you must take care of the three circles.
Right. Starting from the third circle.
Yeah, which is, you know, the hardest to do. It takes the longest. And you cannot just depend on looking after the first two circles. All the money that's going in is in the first two circles.
Tan Sri, do you know if, like, schools today, you know, in, like, moral and in, like, you know, PE, in their syllabus, if this is actually taught, if these things are actually brought up?
I'm not examining it carefully, but I get the impression that physical education has been pushed to the backwaters, really, in compared to our times. They are sort of like, you know,
playtime.
Playtime, or it's one of those, what they call the
co-curricular
things, and you know.
Yep. Okay. Tan Sri, of course, the 2016 Olympics is coming up. Do you have a special message or advice for the athletes that will be travelling to Rio?
Well, I think, you know, everybody is part of this bandwagon where we're looking forward to Malaysia's first Olympic gold medal. And we're not far from there. I mean, for you know, there is the reality of it. I mean, it's not a wish dream or anything. I mean, we do have the badminton player who can deliver this. So we look forward to that and wish him all the best. Now, in between some of the others, maybe having a chance to do a national record, a personal best, reach a final, or maybe even sneak through to a medal. Maybe our archery boys also have a chance. So let's look forward to our first. We have got silver and bronze before. So for to break new ground, let's hope this was the time. And obviously, if they win the first gold medal, we could have a carnival here.
Public holiday.
Public holiday for weeks.
Now, if you missed the first two parts of our chat with Tan Sri Dr. Mani Jagadesan, where he discussed his early years as an athlete and how he was dubbed the fastest man in Asia, plus the concept of Olympism, you can download the podcast at bfm.my/barnan. Till next week, this is Audrey Raj wishing you a sporty weekend ahead. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Quit eating your burgers off a coffee table. If you want to eat a burger, put it on a bar. Follow your instincts to B-Dubs for the new All-American Cheeseburger. Fresh, juicy beef smashed till it's crispy around the edges, covered in gooey cheese, and stacked to the ceiling with deliciousness. And knock that baby down with a frosted beer at the bar. Just like the sports gods intended. The new All-American Cheeseburger at Buffalo Wild Wings. Roar! Please drink responsibly.